الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم today about the voice of Allah, the voice of the nafs, and the voice of the shaitan. Yeah, but I realize it's such a fundamental teaching and one that can go very far and be so very helpful. And it also, in a sense, is the foundation of our relationship to any other Sufi practice, or really any practice that we do. Because we need to know why we are doing this practice. Otherwise, it's empty or worse. I have a student out on the West Coast who hopefully is not on a intensive crash and burn approach to Sufism, taking on a million billion practices and then saying, this is too labor intensive, I can't do it. And I wrote to him last night, you know, Sufis are forbidden to do any practice, including Sufi practices, that their heart does not affirm. If your heart doesn't say yes to it, you will not get good points for doing it anyway. In fact, you mustn't. You mustn't do it unless your heart affirms it. Not your nafs, necessarily. If your nafs says, I want to stay in bed, I don't want to do this, that's irrelevant. If the shaitan says, oh, doing all this praying stuff, you know what your family's going to think, you know what, da-da-da, you know what, you know you're going to be like, that's all the more reason to do it. The shaitan says, no, you know, do the opposite. If your heart, the throne of the All-Merciful, if your heart, that fractal of the unity, if your heart affirms it, do it then. And if your heart does not, then it's not the right time or the right practice. For sure, if I were to do all of the Sufi practices that I supposedly should do, I would have no time for anything else all day long, because it's just endless, all that we could be doing. So I have to make a decision of all the practices, which ones get results for me. We do practices for the results, not to rack up points somewhere. The actual result of a practice should be a further clarification and unveiling of our own heart. In other words, as a result of the practices, veils are lifted, blotches are removed from the mirror, from the light, so that we're able, with more and more clarity, to feel the sense of this light that comes through this donut hole that is part of all light, with less and less interference, less and less distraction, and greater, I don't know what the word is, infusion into all of our life and all of our being. And so I notice about some practices that they really do that for me. The more I do this, my goodness, the more my heart becomes unveiled. and the more I am able to subsume into that awareness, that voice, that presence. Other practices, yeah, it's good, but you know, it's just not making a difference. It's not having the same level of results. So in a life, I'm going to choose the practices that my heart most affirms and that most affirm my heart. This is important before deciding what to do. It's counterproductive to just do it as though God were a separate thing. We mustn't do this with the angry old man in the sky mentality about the divine. Do your practices or God will be angry at you. If you do them, you'll be rewarded. If you don't, you'll be punished. As though this reward, punishment, and doing of the practices was, you know, because like, you're doing it for somebody else, yet you're doing it for God? No! You don't do the practices for God, the separate employer or something. We do it for the unveiling of our own hearts. We do it for opening up the receptor site for living in the divine presence, which we always are. We are always living in the divine presence, but our receptor site gets kind of gunky and gooky and full of stuff. So the practices that are given in a particular tarika, in a particular spoke of the wheel, are practices that are handed down because a bunch of people found them really, really useful. And a bunch of a particular kind of person found them useful. Different tarikas. A tarika is a way, or literally a spoke of a wheel. Mundane life is said to be like a wheel. The divine is like the hub of the wheel, or the heart of it. And there are many different spokes. There needs to be. So which tarika one joins and which practices one takes on have to do with the nature of one's temperament, otherwise known as what gets results. What's good for me? What does my heart affirm? Not my nafs, not the shaitan. What does my heart affirm and what affirms my heart? So the timing on this may be different. The particulars of this may be different. Certain practices were very, very valuable at me, for me for a certain time of my life. I mean, for a while. Boy, writing the stations, CDs, station writing, was absolutely revolutionary. This was back when I was basically on the Sufi path because I wanted Jedi powers. I mean, that's really what it was. I wanted Jedi powers. All these other Sufis had all these Jedi powers. They could say, I can see your liver is, you know. And I'd be like, oh, cool, I want to see someone's liver too. What do I have to do? It was great bait on the hook, you know. And what I found is like, I asked all the teachers who seemed to have the really coolest Jedi powers, what did you do in order to be able to do all this really cool healing stuff? And they said, you know, they named the practices that they did, and the writing of the stations was right on up there among them. And so I started extremely diligently writing those stations, and it was extremely boring at first. And stupid. It was, I thought it was the stupidest thing in the entire world, actually, truthfully, at first time through, top-heavy intellectual. This makes no sense. What is all this? It doesn't make any sense. They're all the same. They don't really say anything. I could write one of these, and I did. I wrote my own station, and it made about as much sense on intellectual levels any of the others. Second time through, I could sort of, it still made no sense. But I could feel that I was a better healer. Third time through, oh my gosh. I actually really got it that every time I did it, a revolution was going on underneath the surface. But it was like something that works from the inside out. So your own nafs may be the last thing that realizes that your soul is ripening. So it was absolutely amazing. And that doesn't seem to be where I'm at right now, although I highly recommend it as a revolutionary practice for people who are in the place to be doing that. For me, praying Salat is really important. because it gets me out of local temporal reality and back into a much bigger space. A lot is the 5 times a day prayer, which I usually manage to do 3 times a day. When you're traveling in a foreign land, you're allowed to do it 3 times a day, and I figure I'm traveling in a foreign land. You know what I mean? This is not Sufi territory, really. So I noticed that if I try to do it 5 times a day, I end up getting angry and resentful because I'm fighting my life in order to be able to do it. This is not right, to end up pissed at my family, inconvenienced by everything, hassled, you know, in order to pray 5 times a day. I'm not getting points for that. I'm like, I got a big sign that says stupid. It's just don't do that. The minute I said, listen, I'm not even gonna try. I'm doing it 3 times a day. The time would open, and it becomes this great opportunity. When we pray Salat is the the Muslim aerobics. You know, you're up and you're kneeling and you're down and you're prostrating and you're up again. We're meant to come into alignment with the cosmos. It's specific times of the day, just before sunrise, just after sundown, high noon, midway between high noon and sundown. And so one comes out of time for my next client into a whole other relationship to time on a much bigger scale. It's like an Allahu Akbar experience. And things that seem very, very important right before I was praying suddenly come into a very different perspective. And it's also meant to be something that we do knowing that this may be the last time we come face to face with our Lord before we die. Because we don't know whether, you know, when we get in our car and drive home, if that's going to be it or not. We never know. And to be able to take 3 times a day or 5 times a day or whatever we can manage, to be able to stop and say, my beloved Allah, if this is the last time, here is my heart. Here is my heart. And to have those checkpoints through the day so that I can't get too whacked out on any trajectory before having to come right back to cosmic alignment and facing my origin and destination. This is good. I mean, there's other meanings in it also. We take in the prophetic light. Each of the positions represents one of the major prophets, and we take that into our body as part of the transformation into developing a prophetic body, basically being here as messenger of the unity. For some people, it's not timely or right to be doing that. It is very strong. Okay. All weird is a power tool for me in particular. Some people, it's not as big a deal. I use it for just about everything. And other practices, we do them with an attention to, is this making a difference? And yes, sometimes it takes a little while. What I notice is it takes about 3 days to know that something's doing something. Sometimes I know right away. Sometimes I have to do it for 3 days in a row before I know, okay. That may be me. It may be that other people have a different circuit time of when results come in for something. But it's something we need to find out about ourselves in order to clarify our relationship to our practices. By which I don't just mean Sufi practices. I mean practices taken from other religions, which may still be Sufi. Islam considers to be Islam anything that affirms divine unity. So the Buddha is a prophet of Islam. Krishna is a prophet of Islam. Anything that affirms divine unity is Islam, according to Islam. So what are my practices? And practices like how I do breakfast. How are my breakfast practices? All these different practices, which is again why 101 in Sufism is learning the distinction between the voices. Because I can't really tell which practices are affirming my heart until I know the difference between my heart and my nafs. There's many a practice that doesn't particularly affirm my nafs. And if I don't know the difference, then I can't really judge. I need to know my own motivations. Learning the distinctions between the voices gives us a window into our own motivations and why we choose to do something or why we choose not to do it. Whose voice am I following? Out at the Sufi University, basically the whole first year essentially is spent on this. Because where can you really go unless you have inside yourself, not someone else telling you, do this, do that. But the student needs to develop first inside themselves, what is motivating me right now? And can I feel from the inside whether this is a good idea? Unveils my heart. A kind of neutral idea or a bad idea. And being able to practice asking in, and sometimes asking each of those voices, it's very educational to ask each of those voices what their opinion is on a particular subject. I find it's nice often to start with the shaitan, believe it or not, because generally speaking, at the beginning of the path, it's much easier to hear the voice of the shaitan than to hear the voice of Allah. And then the further you go along, the easier it is to hear the voice of Allah. And the voice of the shaitan ain't gone, but it's not as easy to hear. It comes in with more subtlety. So early in the path, it's nice to start with the shaitan because you're probably going to get it. You'll pick up on it. And later in the path, it's good to start with the voice of the shaitan because we could skip over that. Don't. Check in. Find out what the subtle shaitan voices are. So it's nice. And hear it. Hear it in its cynicism. Hear it sitting in Allah's lap, you know. Hear its cynicism, hear its nastiness, hear its evasiveness, whatever it might be. Anything that has that feeling of closure and separation and veiling of the heart. When Allah doesn't want us to do something, it's because it's going to further veil our heart. It took me so long to realize this. It was, oh my God. I would have saved so much pain if I'd figured this out sooner. And my saying it may or may not have an impact, but I'm morally obliged to at least give it a try. There I was doing all these exercises and learning, you know, which the voices were and choosing to follow the voice of Allah, even if I didn't want to. And learning eventually that if Allah wants me to do something, it's because it's a good idea. Like really, it's going to be good for me. And then if Allah doesn't want me to do something, and this was an even bigger revelation, it's because it's a bad idea for me. Really? Oh! And when we say bad idea, what we really mean is not that it won't taste good, it may taste terrific, but that it's going to veil my heart and make it harder to hear the voice of Allah. There are certain foods that, frankly, you eat that, it's harder to hear the voice of Allah. That's why Allah says, please don't eat that thing, my dear. Not because Allah is some angry old man in the sky with a bunch of arbitrary rules. That's not what it's about. It's about a warning that this is going to make a veil between us. You may still be able to feel me and hear me, but not as well. If you go sleep with that person, it will put a veil between us. If you start saying things about, if you let your heart be inhabited by those thoughts and words, and you dwell on them and act on them, it will put a veil between us. We will not have the same level of closeness. So, if we follow the shaitan voices, it puts a veil between us and Allah. How thick a veil? It depends. Some of them are minor veils, some of them are thicker veils. But that's the reason for not following the voice of the shaitan. And it's the reason for when Allah says, I know you really want to. I know you think it will feel good and be very fun, or make you feel powerful, or temporarily allay your fears. But it will make more separation between us. You will feel now more justified. There, I got him back. You may feel satisfaction in that. You may feel more sense of security. But we will be further from each other, not closer to each other. And of course Allah wants us to have satisfaction. And of course Allah wants us to have sense of security. But in a greater scheme, which sometimes means working through some peculiar territories and letting go of smaller things in order to get to larger things. You know how you catch a monkey? How you catch a monkey? Apparently monkeys love rice. So a great way to catch a monkey is to take a coconut, hollow it out, make a hole in it just the size of a monkey's hand, fill it with rice, glued to a post. The monkey will go, grab the rice, and now you can just walk up and catch the monkey because they can't get their fist out of the hole. If they let go of the rice, they could escape. But it's very hard to get a monkey to let go of rice. This is the nafs. So when the shaitan is saying, you better, and the nafs is saying, well, I do actually really want to, and I was just waiting for somebody to give me a good reason. There you are, hanging on to the rice. And yes, it is true that sometimes the voice of Allah asks us to give up our precious rice for the sake of being able to open into a much bigger freedom. It's for a much bigger gift. And sometimes in the short run, it feels very, very difficult. This is true. And this is why, again, it's so foundationally important to be able to feel, okay, my nafs is currently hurting like hell, and I am grieving. The voice of my nafs is, I wanted it! And the voice of Allah is, oh yes, beloved, come to me. I will hold you. I have so much for you. Yes, let me support you in your grieving time.
What do you do when you run headlong into social convention that's counter to what your heart's telling you? When you run into a conflict like that and you're not certain whether it's the shaitan or it's your heart, but you know it's supposed to be taboo, but yeah.
Right. So we have two questions here, really. One is the question of what happens when you're not clear if it's your heart or if it's the shaitan. And this is a question with a kind of combination answer. One is, wait. Tread water. Do what you can to buy yourself some time. Second is, well, what do you do in that time that you buy? More of the practices, for one thing, that you have found to help unveil your heart. Okay, because there's times if there's a major decision that needs to be made. If it's a pretty major decision, doing all weird, praying Salah, that's when I go. If it's a really major decision, then I'll spend a number of days increasing my remembrance. For me, Qigong is important also because it cuts down the reverb and my nafs voices are much less loud. I'm just a whole lot less neurotic. So I'll spend a few days really putting extra into as much practices as I can, as much Qigong as I can, in order to not think about the issue, but just work on clearing. And this is really different than obsessing on the issue for 3 days. Stop obsessing on the issue for 3 days. Just work on the unveiling of your heart and bringing your heart into a state of clarity whereby a nafs voice or a shaitan voice quacks like a duck and it gets more obvious. Thirdly is the possibility of working with someone whose assessment of the voices you trust, and you can even work with them without saying what it is that the issue is. You could just ask them to check your alignment. It's one of the nicest things that Sufi teachers often do, and you see happening at school all the time. The person doesn't know whether they should move to San Diego, you know? And you don't tell the person checking your alignment which is which. You just go ahead and stay inside yourself, I'm going to move to San Diego. And the teacher watches your alignment. And then you say, I am not going to move to San Diego. I'm going to stay, you know, whatever it is, whatever the alternative is, it's Detroit. I'm going to Detroit. And you have someone read A and B without telling them what A and B is, and you just get some feedback. And sometimes it's great, the feedback is crystal clear. The person says, you look clean as a whistle with A, you look like your mother's would-be daughter on B. Sometimes it's a mixture, sometimes none of them looks completely clear, and it means three more days of strong practices, or finding a different way to frame the question so that we can get something that's clear. So that's some ideas, and there's probably many more for what do you do when you're not sure which voice it is. That is the work, really. That is the work. Then comes the question of something comes through and we're sure that it's the voice of the law, and our first reaction is, oh shit. One of the teachings that I found very helpful out at the school was they always said, when a law gives you an order, don't say how, say yes. And then how will be revealed. And there's been many a voice of a law that I've said, how am I going to, like, and I've held back saying yes, because I want the details first on how this is going to work. I'm not going to commit to this until you assure me of the repercussions of this whole thing. But it doesn't seem to work that way. And if instead I say yes, with my hands out awaiting more details, or even sometimes saying yes, a law, yes, can you tell me more about this? And can you tell me more about that? And you can you tell me more about how I will make a living? And can you tell me what I should do or say to my family to help ease their hearts and make this understandable? You can always ask for more information. Now, this may be time consuming. I mean, I'm thinking about what it was like when I was profoundly morning sick with Joshua. I mean, it was unbelievable. It was not just in the morning, and it was like being on a tilt-a-whirl that went very, very badly wrong. It was so awful. Don't empathize. Keep your feet on the ground. Yeah. All right. And so I was praying to understand this, and whenever I asked Allah, what you know, can you help me with this? All I would get was this picture of this sort of like a fetus and sort of like a spaceman out in outer space. Like, okay, thank you, Allah. Can you give me more details on what this has to do with morning sickness, this space fetus? And gradually as I stayed with it, the space fetus, like it was the space fetus and the planet. And then after a while it became clear that I was the planet. And I mean, it took days, okay? It took hours of stopping and doing practices, coming back into it, to get this thing about morning sickness having to do with my relationship with gravity being very, very different than the fetus's relationship with gravity, and our proprioceptors getting those very, very mixed up because we're in union here. And so which end is up was very seriously in question. And so we had to get into this whole dialogue via Allah with my fetus, who was not even yet fully in, because he was still floating. His spirit was not even fully incarnate, but as it came in, it was like, whoa, let's do these things. It made me feel sick. You know, getting really clear. It's like, your job, exploring being in a body. My job, fetal nutrition. Okay. And making those differentiations, and we ended up making this deal that what, you know, I let it be known that this is what I needed, and Allah's sort of satellite relay through this. And I said, okay, and what do you need? And what Joshua said is, I need you to eat three times as much protein, and I need you to bounce. So I started eating, that day, started eating three times as much protein, and got one of those big exercise balls, and just bounced on it a lot. And we were fine from then on, because he just wanted to have some fun entering the physical realm and checking out this thing, you know, this whole deal. And whenever, I mean, then the morning sickness was gone. It was over. And never came back, and that was that, except every now and then it would come back a little, and I'd just get on the exercise ball for a little while, and we were done. So sometimes we get stuff from Allah, and we need to stay with it and ask for details, but ask for those details after saying yes. Okay, Allah, I hear you. Tell me more. Sometimes, I have to say, occasionally, sometimes you just get a point-blank order, and then you really have to decide how much of a leap of faith and what are the repercussions if I'm wrong. In which case, if at all possible, it's really good to consult with somebody whose discernment you trust, or three of them. Sometimes you learn by trying, and especially if the repercussions are not going to be tremendous. I mean, what my biggest lesson was this one, I've probably told this story to some folks here, of this client of mine who was this little metal CF, little very cynical kind of little lung. And she was an acupuncture student and had terrible insomnia, and I've been treating her for months and getting absolutely nowhere. And I always, at the end of a treatment, I stand there and I ask, well, is there anything else that you want me to give, or anything else that you want me to do or say? I usually say give, but I mean do or say. And Allah said, thank her for smoking. I said, first of all, she's an acupuncture student in a new age hoo-ha. I don't know that she smokes, okay? I'm not going to ask this, I'm not going to tell this metal, purist, rigid chick, God says, thank you for smoking, when I don't even know that she does smoke. Is this a little far out of all limb? Right? How about something else, God? We do this differently? Allah says, no, tell her. Tell her thank you for smoking. Tell her I really, really thank her so much for it. Now that she's switched to this new brand of cigarettes, I feel so close to her when she smokes. I hate smoking, okay? I'm one of these rabid anti-smoke people, mainly because if people smoke in my presence, I become homicidal. It's not a moral issue, it's a medical issue. But it becomes a moral issue, you know, don't you like that thing, you know. And I'm going to tell her that God says that now that you've switched your brand of cigarettes, God feels so close to you when you smoke. I don't know if I stood there, it was a long, long time, feeling like I didn't know what I was going to do, and finally it was that feeling of like I can feel on everybody's part, you know. And finally I decided, well, I am committed to being a flying jackass of love, and this may be where I prove it, so let's see what happens. I said, well, you know, sometimes things kind of come to me, you know, and I'm not really sure, but I feel like something came to me, and that I should say this to you. So if I'm off, I'm off. But I'm gonna say that what I feel like I'm getting is that God is saying thank you for smoking, and that now that you've changed your brand of cigarettes, God feels very close to you when you smoke. And she burst into not just tears, but sobs. Huge, like those huge, total autonomic, lung-releasing sobs for quite some time. And when she was done crying, I mean, she just looked like Like, I mean, she used to look like a tin can. She was so hard-edged. And now she just looked like a butterfly or a sponge or something so porous and wide open. And she said, about a month ago, I went out to, I can't remember what reservation it was, out in New Mexico, and I bought these cigarettes with this organically grown holy tobacco, and I've been just smoking one a day as the sun goes down and wondering if there is a God, and if so, if what I'm having right now is a spiritual experience. And so her deepest yearning was answered by my telling her that God thanked her for smoking and felt so close to her with this new brand of cigarettes. I mean, there it was, and she slept very well after that. And, you know, nothing else could have touched it. So it was one of those things where the only real risk was my personal dignity. And I have to say, if my personal dignity is the only risk, what are you going to put first, the naps or a law? You can hem and haw and say, I'm a lot, and then do it. So these voices, again, voice of Allah, especially at the beginning, before we're really in our practices, can be the most difficult. That's why we do the practices, is so that we can start getting the feeling of, okay, this is what it feels like when I'm with Allah. This is my gold standard. And doing it enough that we can tell when we're there and we can tell when we're not there. Because sometimes we don't know what the voice of Allah is, but we know that we don't know what the voice of Allah is. That's valuable right away. Okay, don't sign it yet. Yeah. Sometimes it's amazing how what seems important to the nafs is not important to Allah, or vice versa. I mean, there's been times when I'm all wrapped up in, you know, whether I'm gonna spend the afternoon with Joey or whether I'm gonna accept Sally's invitation, and I don't know which one to do. And I'm like, Allah, come on, okay, I'm in total surrender. Because you have to surrender. You have to say, like, you have to actually say, Allah, I'm gonna follow what you want me to do. If you're saying like, yeah, pulling for Joey, Allah, what do you want? It's a busy signal. You can't hear the voice of Allah. You gotta clear the busy signal. So it really has to be in that place of, okay. I mean, another story, when I had this blocked milk duct that was hurting really bad, like worse and worse and worse, and I'm lying there trying to pray enough to know what to do. I tried everything with herbs, with acupuncture, whatever, trying to figure out what to do. And I had Gentil take Joshua and give me 3 straight hours, which was unheard of at that time, to lie there in bed and pray. And what most of those 3 hours were spent doing was getting to the point where I could, with my whole being, affirm that if I end up with mastitis and die, if that is Allah's will, then I am going with Allah's will. Whatever you want, Allah. If you want me to stay in pain, I'm going to stay in pain. If you wanted to. But if there is something I could do, then I would love to know it. And as soon as I got there, the message was able to come through that there was something I was holding in my heart that I was not expressing. And then as soon as I started expressing that and let myself cry over it, it let go. So the nafs has to let go in order to be able to hear the voice of Allah. So sometimes the doing of the practices is to help loosen up the nafs enough to get to the place where we can honestly say, yes, I have my preferences, but my real preference and my deeper preference is to do what you would have me do, because I know and I trust that even if I don't get it, that is the better thing. I will even give up my rice if you tell me, let go of the rice. I'm really, really willing. And then Allah sometimes says things like, do whatever you want. It's no difference to me. Because sometimes it doesn't actually, I mean, it's nice to have gone through the exercise. It loosens the nafs. But sometimes that was the whole thing was a nasty thing, and it wasn't significant at all, and you can just do whatever you want. Other times it really does matter. If it seems to matter to Allah that I wear pink today, I'm going to wear pink today. It's just fine, whatever. Maybe I'm delusional, maybe I'm not. If the consequences are not extreme, I'm going to go with it. Yeah. So these are important distinctions, that sometimes the nafs get really wrapped up around something, and from the point of view of Allah, there's a number of different ways home. Be in remembrance of me, beloved, whether you're with Sally or with Joe this afternoon. Sometimes there's a really strong feeling of, beloved, it will be much better for everybody if you go this way instead of that way. And if it's pitchy, then you can say things like, thank you, Allah. Yes. What should I tell Sally? What does she need? What can I give her? And what would you have me say and do here? Please give me guidance on that. And it may have come in words. It may come in visuals. It may come just with a kind of body feeling. A lot of the time it's just a kind of somatic sensation of having received something. And it's a real test of the left brain trusting the right brain, because, how do I put it? It happens to me frequently, and I've seen it happen to other people also, that the guidance comes, but it's like an implant that's going to be activated when you're actually in the situation. And you don't get foreknowledge. It's like, okay, Allah gives you a feeling of something, and then you're just going to have to show up totally blind and trusting that you actually did get guidance, and that what you say will come from that. It's a little nerve-wracking. It's a deep station of slavehood and a deep station of faith, and I cannot tell you why we all have different communication systems and why we are created differently. I assume it has something to do with the multifarious glory of existence and the need to celebrate in very different ways of being. And so for that kind of person, there's that importance of at least being able to recognize that moment of, oh, something. I don't know what the something is. But there was a moment of feeling heart alignment. And now I have to go talk to her, even though I don't have the faintest idea what I'm going to say. But I got the something in. And then comes staying in alignment in the situation, not knowing what I'm going to do and what I'm going to say, and having to hotter, hotter, colder, colder on that very kinesthetic level, moment by moment, feeling for that guidance. You don't know in advance, but there's something to follow, something to stay on track with. Some of the practices we do in order, well, to unveil means two things. One, it means to bring more clarity and more proximity. Two, it means to remove some crazy crap that is causing veiling, namely the shaitan voices. And it does often happen that something comes in that's voice of Allah, and then we have a number of choices. We can say, oh, voice of Allah, and align with it. We can say, voice of Allah, how can I manipulate it? How can I add salt and pepper and maybe wrap it in something and say, see? And that's usually a nafs coming in to it. Or the shaitan can come in and say, well, you couldn't possibly be right about this. Either because, you know, you're just a loser fundamentally, or because da-da-da-da-da, or this will happen, or that will happen, or da-da-da-da-da. I don't know, sometimes it just gets to chattering so much that you can't hear anything else anymore, and it's just a pure distraction factor. The crackling on the phone line, it just makes a lot of crackling on the phone line so that you can't hear. My last phone sufi class, there's a lot of crackling on the phone line, and it was such a deep teaching for me not to get involved with the crackling and sort of crackle back at it, but how to just plunge beneath the crackling and give what I had to give from somewhere deeper. And it takes a kind of plunging into not necessarily rational certainty, but a kind of plunging into the physiology of faith is what I would say. A turning of my attention into coming back into heart space. Okay, that's what the shaitan has to say. Allah, what do you have to say? That helps a lot of the time. Once you know something is the shaitan's voice, it's no longer running you on automatic. So it's like it's had its teeth pulled already. Okay. Oh, that's what the shaitan has to say. Sometimes it's hard to get to what does Allah have to say. I'm trying to describe how you do it, this thing, this kind of plunging into, just jumping both feet on the water into the heart space, into the heart physiology, into I'm with you, Allah, even if I don't have the faintest idea what that means exactly. I'm not listening to the shaitan, even if the shaitan throws a temper fit all around my head and screams and yells. I'm physiologically hurling myself into receptor sighthood for you. And I will sit here in the desert for 40 days assailed by demons. Was it 40 days or 30 days?
40.
Okay. How many nights, how many days and nights was Noah with the rain?
That was
40. That was 40 also. Okay, that's why I'm confused. I was like, couldn't be. Yes, it is. There we go. Alhamdulillah. 40 days and 40 nights in the desert assailed by demons. Or on the ark, whatever the case may be.
40 days in Lent.
There we go. It appears to be a significant period of time of dealing with not getting a positive message, but refusing to listen to messages that we know are going to put veils and separate us from being able to hear the message. The crank anonymous caller keeps calling and saying, you're a jerk, don't do it, you're a jerk. And we just keep saying, thank you for sharing, bye. To keep re-clearing the line and just turning in that direction. Sometimes that's enough. It's worth trying for a period of time first. Because sometimes the shaitan really will just let up. If it's just a distraction voice and not what I call a detective voice, then what it takes to clear it is enough light. Enough affirmation of, you know, I may sit here in the desert for 40 years, but I'm not following the shaitan. And the shaitan will say, are you sure? It'll be a long time. It'll be your whole life. And if you're sure, that light, that yang, that faith, then the shaitan will try a couple more times, and then we'll get bored and go away because there's no free lunch there. It's not working. So it's worth trying that because it may be a matter of that level of, I'm not listening to you. Even if there's nothing else to listen to, I'm not listening to you. That's how strong that commitment is. And sometimes there's the need to do detective work. Sometimes the shaitan is saying things, could be about us, about what kind of a jerk we are, what kind of a loser, what kind of damaged goods, broken, whatever. You know, and then we have to say, who in my nafs is listening to that? Where is the wounded place that's not feeling able to respond to the call of Allahu Akbar? Radical inclusiveness of everything except this measly, miserable part of me. I don't belong. That little one in the dark. That little one that feels unworthy of coming into the Holy Presence. Where is she? What is that? Helping return that to Allah. It's like, why would I listen to a voice that tells me that I'm ugly or stupid? Why would I listen? Finding that and bringing that back home. Letting the shaitan, as it so unerringly does, point to the places that need healing. Including the times when the shaitan is saying those things, not necessarily about us, but about somebody else, about whole organizations, about anything. They're jerks. They're stupid. I hate them. This is phony. It's bullshit. I was working with a client earlier who was really discovering her bullshit detector in force, and it had been suppressed for a long time. She was very nice and not allowed to say, this is bullshit. And it was really coming up, and she's feeling bad about this. And it was definitely in the full ugliness of it. This is crap, and that's crap, and it's all crap, and there's this sneer and snarl. And okay, there's some shaitan mixed in there. We need to know it. We need to look at it and look at where's the naps part of it that needs healing. And in this case, it was a kind of self-respect that was struggling to emerge, a sense of higher standards. How do I explain this? Sometimes when we're talking shit about somebody else, we are actually seeing their shit, but it comes out really different if we're also seeing their divinity. If we're not seeing just, oh, this is a poopy diaper in my face, there's a baby in it, you know? And yes, there's something that's needed. Example, when the shaitan tells me that I just did a lousy job at something, that I've upset someone and I shouldn't have done that, and I'm hopeless and don't deserve to be around other humans. When I take it to Allah, what Allah frequently says is something along the lines of, yes, beloved, I am also sad about what just happened. I also wish that this had gone differently. Here, let's look very carefully at what happened and help you to be more mindful and help you to learn to be considerate and help you to be able to be with people in a way that will be more pleasing to both of us. Severity may be called for, but it's a loving severity born of a loving discernment. There are many shaitan voices that come up in the place of severance between love and truth. I'm seeing the truth, but I'm not feeling the love. That's not a divine station. Seeing the love and not seeing the truth is also not a divine station. It's called bullshit, just as much as seeing truth but not seeing love. And there's what I call children of the truth and children of the love, that often people early in their life make a decision. Okay, if I can only have one and the other, I can be who I really am and say what I really think, or I can be loved. And the children of the love say, well, love is what's really important. So I'm going to let go of really being who I really am and saying what I really mean. That's okay, because love is what is really matters. Love is the divine, and that's true. And then there's the children of the truth that say, screw it. The truth is the most important thing, and it's what's real, and it is most holy to stick by the truth. And if it loses me love, fine, I can do without it. And they're both right and they're both wrong. Because Allah is the radically inclusive, and it is the loving truth, which means that sometimes there's great severity at the same time as great beauty. And often shaitan voices are truthful in a way. Well, she is going to na-na-na. See? She got to na-na-na again. She's a jerk. And there's enough truth mixed in that the nap says, that's truth. There's truth in that. I should listen to this voice. There's truth in it. But there isn't love in it. And if there isn't love in it, then it's not really the truth. Any more than if there isn't truth in it, it's not really the love. So a lot of shaitan voices are detective invitation for looking at what is it that I cannot look on with love? What are the qualities in me that I can't look on in love? Because usually it's something here. And going back again to Allah and saying, how do you see this? How would a loving source look upon this? Certainly with severity, possibly with sorrow, possibly with judgment but not judgmentalness. This is not okay. but in a way that offers redemption. Always a hand extended in love. A road home. Here's what we need to look at. Here's how we can clean this up. Even if we don't have the specifics yet, the feeling of the hand extended, as we say, this is not all right. The love and the truth.